The first reading on the third Sunday of Advent is from Isaiah chapter 35, verses 1 through 10. The desert and the parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. It will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendor of our God. Strengthen the feeble hands, steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear, your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer, and the mute tongue shout for joy. Water will gush forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs. In the haunts where jackals once lay, grass and reeds and papyrus will grow, and a highway will be there. It will be called the Way of Holiness. It will be for those who walk on that way. The unclean will not journey on it. Wicked fools will not go about on it. No lion will be there, nor any ravenous beast. They will not be found there. But only the redeemed will walk there, and those the Lord has rescued will return. They will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. This is the word of the Lord. The second reading is from James chapter 5, verses 7 through 11. Be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. This is the word of the Lord. The Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. When John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to see? A reed swayed by the wind? If not, what did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? No, those who wear fine clothes are in the king's palaces. Then what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'I will send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' Truly, I tell you, among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet whoever is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been subjected to violence, and violent people have been raiding it. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John. And if you are willing to accept it, he is the Elijah who was to come. Whoever has ears, let them hear." This is the gospel of the Lord.
The truth is, it's not easy. What's not easy? Being a Buffalo Bills fan. Okay, that's not it. And you're probably here tired of hearing my lame Buffalo Bills references. We don't have that many more to go. What's not easy? Wait for it. Wait for it. Oh, wait. That's what's not easy. Waiting. At this time of year, of course, the waiting that is hard for the little ones is waiting and having anticipation of what the man in the red suit might bring. Yes, whether you're 2 years old or 102 years old, waiting isn't necessarily easy. And I have to believe that for those of us who live in America, or most any first world nation, waiting is getting harder than it's ever been. Now, why do I hold that view? Because for several decades now, we've been living in a society of instant gratification. Instant gratification. Did you know that for decades and decades and decades after Election Day, those who were running for president didn't find out the results of the election for weeks? Now, I'm not talking about the court thing that usually follows these days. Just initially finding out. They went home, they did what they normally did, and waited for a couple of weeks, waiting for the letter to arrive carrying the results. We live in a society where we have come to expect nearly instant everything. On Christmas Day, I'll conduct our Christmas morning worship service here at 9:30. We will then, Stephanie and I, drive to Jacksonville. We'll get on a plane. We'll fly to Hartford. And there's even a good chance that we'll get to see our youngest grandchild before they go to bed. All on Christmas Day. Back in the days when the presidential candidates had to wait for weeks and weeks to find out the results of the election, it might have taken a month to get from Tallahassee to Connecticut, if Tallahassee even existed at that point. And of course, you know who's to blame for instant gratification, don't you? Oh, gosh, no, Dan. McDonald's. No, I'm serious. Ever since the advent of the McDonald's chain restaurants where you went up to the window and for 18 cents you had a ready-made McDonald's burger waiting for you, we started our drift towards instant gratification. And when the drive-up window came on the scene, it only catapulted us forward in our drive for instant gratification. You know what I once saw in Buffalo? A long time ago, actually, even before drive-up windows at restaurants, a funeral home with a drive-up viewing window. Yeah, it had once been a bank. And when the funeral home bought the building, they converted the drive-through banking window into a drive-through viewing window. Now, I've mentioned this once before, I do recall. So does anyone remember the name of the funeral home? It's Amagon Funeral Home. But do you see it? Am I gone? And actually, They didn't come up with that. That was the family name, and they're still in business. They've been in business in Buffalo for 90 years. And now they have 15 funeral homes, I looked up the other day. Drive-through funeral home visitation. Good grief. You know, as Stephanie and I have been talking about our retirement coming up in next June, one of the recurring conversations we've been having is how to make life slow down and become less complicated. Yes, that's what we long for. So when Our wireless Wi-Fi router ceased to function on Monday of this week, and it took 2 whole days for the router to appear at the door. And I ran to the door, and I took the router out of the UPS man's hands. You'd have thought it was Christmas morning. Finally, we could be connected to the outside world again. Methinks we need to work on our plan a little. Or at least our attitudes. Now, what does all that have to do with us being here today? Well, if you were listening closely to the lessons this morning, you will have heard about waiting. In the Old Testament lesson, Israel, and we too, are told by the prophet Isaiah that God's day of wrath and restoration will one day come. And he tells them to wait. What appears to the Israelites as a barren wasteland and desert will one day spring forth in bloom. He says more. He says, then will the eyes of the blind be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like deer, the mute tongue shout for joy. Yes, when Jesus comes the second time, all that is wrong will be made right. Every illness or disability afflicting the life of the faithful will be removed. And Isaiah tells them to wait patiently. In the second lesson today from James, we heard what James, the half-brother of Jesus, wrote to the persecuted followers of Jesus living in exile. He wrote them about patiently waiting. Be patient, then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains? You, too, be patient and stand firm because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, for you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Waiting. Patiently waiting. You know, we would do well to do a little reality check once in a while. James was writing to Christians who had to flee from their homes in and about Jerusalem for other places. Why? Because they were being persecuted because of their faith in Jesus. And you know, we've seen that in our day too. In Iraq, when ISIS flooded in from Syria, whole towns had to flee because they were Christian. So yes, it happens. It happened then and it happens now, but it doesn't happen to us, at least not yet. Now, to be sure, the attack on 9/11 was in part because we are perceived as a Christian nation. To what degree that is true, that we are a Christian nation, is another topic for another time. But in truth, we don't have the kind of persecution like the people to whom James wrote, or Christians in places like Iraq and Syria, places like the Sudan and Indonesia. And I would say that because we don't have that kind of persecution, I would say that the kind of patience, the kind of waiting we do, doesn't hold a candle to the difficulty of waiting patiently to which many of our more severely persecuted brothers and sisters are called. Yes, we would be blessed by an honest evaluation of our hardships as compared with so many others of our brothers and sisters in different parts of the world in 2016. Really, we have trouble waiting at Chick-fil-A or the doctor's office or for the mail to come or a thousand other comparatively minor things. The question is, how well are we waiting for the second coming of Jesus? That's what these first two lessons are about. And then we arrive at today's gospel lesson. John the Baptist is in prison. The queen, Herodias, had pressured the king, Herod, into arresting John because John had been condemning the two of them publicly. Because you see, Herodias was the wife of Herod's brother. I wonder how holiday family gatherings went for that crowd. So John sends some disciples to Jesus, and he sends them with a question. That question to Jesus is this: are you the one, or should we expect someone else? Wait. I thought John was the one who had proclaimed Jesus to be the Messiah. I thought it was John who saw Jesus walking in the distance one day and said to his disciples, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." Yeah, he was that one. Why is he now seemingly doubting whether Jesus was in fact the Messiah? Because John was having a crisis of faith. Don't you feel better now? I mean, seriously, if you've ever had moments when your faith has seemed to waver or wane, just remember that none other than John the Baptist had his moments too. And Jesus said, "I'll tell you, among those born of women, there's no one greater than John the Baptist." And he had his moments. You see, John apparently, like nearly everybody else in Israel, thought that when Messiah came, he would first of all get rid of the Romans and then allow or restore Israel to self-rule. But now John finds himself in prison. Very possibly, John's question to Jesus is really saying to Jesus, Jesus, just in case you didn't know it, I'm languishing over here in prison, and I hear the queen is calling for my head on a platter, which, if you know the story, is exactly what ended up happening. So, Jesus, if you're the Messiah, could you please speed things up a little bit and get me out of here? Yes, even John, the great John the Baptist, had his moments. Anyway, Jesus sends the disciples, John's disciples, back to him with a response. Jesus says, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." Jesus is referencing Old Testament prophecies, even the one that we heard this morning from Isaiah. He's referencing Old Testament prophecies about what the Messiah will do when he came into the world. More precisely, Jesus was referencing prophecies about the Messiah would do during his first visitation to planet Earth. He came to teach and preach and heal and cast out demons and die on the cross and rise from the dead, conquering death for we who hold faith in Him. He didn't come to defeat the Romans and bring judgment to the earth as a whole. Those things, the things John and his countrymen had hoped and assumed the Messiah would do when he came, he will do at the time of his second coming. Essentially, Jesus is teaching John. He's teaching him. He's correcting his understanding of what Messiah will do. And, in effect, telling John the same thing we heard from both James and Isaiah when they wrote to their audiences about waiting, patiently waiting. So, how do you do with the whole waiting thing? But I'm not asking about how you're doing with your waiting in lines at Chick-fil-A or the doctor's office or in traffic or for Christmas to come. I'm asking about how you're doing with waiting for the return of Christ. I would rather imagine that most Christians in America don't spend much time waiting for Jesus because they hardly ever think of His return. Our brothers and sisters of faith in places like Iraq or Syria or Sudan or other places where Christians are being violently and regularly persecuted, I can guarantee you, look for His return with great regularity and longing. The point of these lessons, for we who live in a land where we are only occasionally persecuted, is to help us recalibrate to that which is truly important. And there are things that are important. Here are some of them. Family, friends, health, wellness, shelter, food. Those things are indeed important. But I have another list. And I would suggest that this list is even more important. God. Our relationship with God through faith in Jesus. Being filled with the Spirit each day so that we can carry out what He calls us to be and do each day. And the return of Christ. Advent is a time of remembering that Jesus is the King of the universe. One day, the King will come back to reclaim the kingdoms of the world from all the false gods and rebellious people who continue to reject Him. He will destroy the world as we know it. The current heaven will also pass away, and He will make them anew. Eden shall be restored, and we who, because of the grace of God, hold faith in Jesus, shall forever be in the wonder of that place. May we each this day recommit to waiting. Waiting for the King to come. And faithfully bringing the love and the message of Jesus to everyone we can in this fallen, hurting, and broken world. Amen.